Last one. The House Judiciary Committee is in session. In attendance is the full committee. Representative Lynn, Representative Grunberg, Representative Coghill, Representative Ramirez, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Holmes, Representative Gatto. We're delighted to have a lot of participation today from young people that are involved in youth in government from around Juneau, Fairbanks, the middle level school, at the high school level. We have a homeschooler, which we're very happy about because we love homeschoolers. It's a great program. You keep our whole educational system balanced, and we appreciate homeschoolers and doing it yourself. We are well aware that the youth in government people have to leave by 2. However, Representative Grunberg has a bill up in this committee, and he has a bill in another committee up at 1:30, and we have an expert up, two experts up, calling in from Chicago. So with that, we are going to take up House Bill 102, and we have a CS before us. So Representative Dahlstrom, if you would move to adopt the CS for House Bill 102, please.
Yes, sir. I would be happy to move the CS for House Bill 102, version /S.
Okay. Without objection, HB 102 is before us. Representative Grunberg, floor is
Thank
yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. And as a matter of fact, we can take the experts from out of state briefly, and then you can take these young people, if you'd like. This bill is introduced at the request of the Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, and it updates two articles in the Uniform Commercial Code. The first one is the general article, Article 1, and the second one is the Warehouseman's Article 7. In one case, 31 states have adopted it, and in the second case, 35 states have adopted it. And it's just bringing us up to date. They're mainly technical amendments, and we're conforming a few state laws, and they're mentioned in the explanation of changes. Look at the amended 316 version. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Ms. Terry Thurman, who's a very fine attorney, and she will introduce the experts.
Hi, Ms. Thurman. How are you? If you'll introduce yourself for the record, we're so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Terry Thurman, and I'm one of Alaska's Uniform Law Commissioners, along with Lynn Levengood of Fairbanks and Mike Garrity of Anchorage. I'm a public member, and our delegation also includes Deborah Baer, the Department of Law representative, Justice Walter Carpinetti from the Alaska Supreme Court, and Tam Cook as an associate member, and two life members, Art Peterson and Grant Callow. And we make up the group of lawyers who represent the state of Alaska with the national organization, the National Conference of Uniform, National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, which is an organization that for many, many, many years has been developing uniform and model acts for consideration by the states. And one of our missions each year is to come up with a plan for which uniform acts might be beneficial to Alaska and work on trying to get those adopted. And we identified the Uniform Commercial Code updates that Representative Grunberg described as appropriate for Alaska, especially in light of the fact we're starting to fall behind the other states, the 35 and the 31 states that have already enacted these revisions. And they are just revisions to laws we already have on the books that govern the commercial transactions that many, if not all of you, will have engaged in. The warehousing-related provisions are to bring up to the modern age, including the electronic age, things like shipping a Mother's Day present to your mom outside, and you use FedEx, and they do everything electronic. Well, these laws will help bring us up to date and track with the reality of how that work is being done. And as Representative Grunberg described, the general provisions in the Article 1 are also updating the law. And with that, I would like to, if in the interest of time, I would like to, unless there are questions of me, I would like to introduce the two representatives of the conference, Professor Bill Henning of the University of distinguished professor from the University of Alabama School of Law, who worked on the drafting committee for some of the articles of the Uniform Commercial Code. And we also hopefully have online from Chicago Mike Keir, who is the legislative director for the conference. And they are available to answer your questions. And before I do that, I forgot, I have to give two caveats. First of all, we can speak both the Alaska delegation and our national experts speak only to the portions of the CS that are the Uniform Commercial Code. So the amendments which added some provisions in Title IX and Title 34 are not within our purview, and I in particular have to be very careful not to take a position on anything outside the Uniform Commercial Code because of my day job as the Chief Administrative Law Judge for the state. I cannot express a position or offer legal advice on those provisions. So I'm here sort of as an orchestrator, if you will, only on the UCC provisions. With that, Mr. Chairman, would you like to hear from Professor Henning or Mr. Kerr, or would you prefer to open it up to the committee for questions?
Your Honor, thank you very much for that introduction. And I want to recognize that Representative Gardner is here with us. Mr. Kerr is not yet with us, but we do have Mr. Henning online. Mr. Henning, do you have any remarks that you'd like to make with the committee? If you just introduce yourself and your affiliation, please.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. My name is William Henning, Bill, and I am a professor at the University of Alabama School of Law. I am a commissioner with the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. And during the time that Articles 1 and 7 were finally produced, I was the executive director of the National Conference. And so I was intimately involved with the drafting projects, and in addition, my academic area of study is the Uniform Commercial Code. That's sort of my way of introduction to me and my relationship with these bills. I won't make any other comments at this point. I'd be glad to answer any of your questions, though.
All right. And Michael Kerr is now with us, or Michael Kerr. Mr. Kerr, are you with us? Yes?
Yes, this is Michael Kerr. I'm on as well. I'm the legislative director for the Uniform Law Commission. Bill's by far the better expert on the substantive matters, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have for me.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members to either of our experts? Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Judge Baer, you can answer this question, I believe. And this is very...
Judge Thurman?
Did I get it wrong, Terry Baer?
I'm Terry Thurman, and
I apologize.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dahlstrom, excuse me, Vice Chair Dahlstrom, if I could ask for the record, just please call me Ms. Thurman, because I'm not here in my capacity as a judge, and I like to keep a nice clean record. I have the leave slip to prove I'm on annual leave.
Thank you. We understand. Thank you, Ms. Thurman, for being here. Can you just, for my benefit, I want to make sure I understand correctly that the Uniform Commercial Code that has to do with the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act has nothing at all to do with the the Uniform Building Code. Because
no.
We have such a huge disparity of thoughts and views on the Uniform Building Code versus the Universal Code. And I want to see if there's any in here.
Well, through the chair, Vice Chair Dahlstrom, if I understand the question correctly, and we might want to get Professor Henning to chime in on this, the Uniform Building Code is not even an act that was adopted or put forward by this organization. And to the extent we have electronic filing-related provisions in here, they would not affect, I don't believe, the state-adopted or municipal-adopted uniform building codes. They might affect the commercial transactions that the people who live and work under those codes engage in, and that's probably the extent of my knowledge on that. Would you like to hear from Professor Henning on that as well?
Through the chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Actually, Ms. Thurman, your answer is sufficient, and I'm happy to have that on the record, and thank you for clearing that up for me. Thank
sure.
you.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have just a question in the definitional section. Unfortunately, the version I have marked up in front of me is not the CS, so I might be off my page numbers. In the original version, it's on page 5. It's the section 45.01.211 general definitions. And at least in the version...
Section 9, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Section 9?
In
the S version, it's at the very bottom of page 4.
Is that section? It's in the bottom of page 4. Great. It is in the definition of defendant.
That's on page 6, line 31.
Page 6, line 31. Oh, look at that. Thank you. I'm just curious where... it says a defendant includes a person in the position of defendant in a counterclaim, cross-claim, or third-party claim, but doesn't include claim. Is that... Should the word claim be in there, or was it intentionally left out?
Mr. Chair, I think I can...
Representative Runberg.
In the general definitional section in Title 1, the term includes is defined to mean includes but is not limited to. So I think that also very clearly includes claims.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd love to have our experts weigh in on that.
Representative Holmes, I'll remind you that Representative Grunberg is an expert.
Oh, yes,
on
of
this
course.
And many other subjects.
Of course. How
that
silly. I would love to have our other experts, Mr. Chairman, weigh in on this as well.
Yeah, that notwithstanding, we're delighted to hear from Mr. Kerr or Mr. Henning, whoever's more appropriate.
This is Bill Henning. I'll take a crack at that. The explanation that I heard is exactly right. The term defendant would include anyone who was defending against an ordinary claim, and the word includes is designed to make it absolutely clear that someone in this position defending a counterclaim, cross-claim, or third-party claim is also within that term. I might add that I am looking at the original version of Article 1, and that definition comes straight through from the Uniform Commercial Code, Original 1, as defined in the 1962 official text.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Between the two experts, that I'm satisfied.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Grunberg.
I would just like to thank Mr. Henning for one particular section on the bill, and if the members would look at the explanation of changes amended 316, the last page talking about section 50, which is back on page 37 of the CS. Our Alaska has removed some language there, lines 9 to 12, and some conforming language, which brings Alaska up with the latest version of federal law. So we are now in this, the most current version in the United States, and I appreciate Professor Henning's work on bringing that up today.
Very good. Representative Coghill.
One last question, and this could be to the sponsor and any expert that he thinks should answer it, and that is on the section that deals with indirect court rule changes and section 01307, which is the prima facie evidence. Just kind of interested about the court rule change and if that is in keeping with a standard that that the other codes are keeping with.
What page is that, please?
Well, it's on page 16, which is 4501307, but it's referenced out of section 118 on page 62.
So we're looking at page 16 and page 61?
62.
So line 10 of the S version.
Yes.
Page 16, line 10.
And page 62. Yes, if I may dialogue with Mrs. Thurbin for a second, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to take a crack? Because we talked about that, I believe.
And the question is, Mr. Chairman, is that the same standard that is required by other uniform codes with regard to the third-party documents? And since it requires court rule change in Alaska, I just kind of want to make sure we're heading in the right direction.
I apologize, Representative Coghill. Which lines on page 16 are you referring to?
Page 16 on line 10. But if you really want to know why I'm asking it, if you go to section 118 on page 62, they're asking us to to amend a court rule, and the conditional effect of the change is that Section 114 receives a two-thirds vote. So the two-thirds vote of that deals with amending Rule 403, which this is the problem with legislation. You have one section refers to another. So you have the indirect court rule change on Section 114, page 61, that is talked about in Section 118, page 62, that references the 307 on page 16. So you can see, I'm just asking, we're going to amend a court rule based on page 16, line 10, which is section 307 of Title 45, and it has a change or an effect on our court rule. And I just want to make sure that this prima facie evidence that you have here is this standard that changes our court rule fits within the requirements of the uniform law.
May I take a crack at that?
Representative Grunberg.
Did you? Okay. And I'd ask Professor Henning to confirm this. There are two court rule changes. The first court, if I may go a little broader than what you said, Jeff. The first court rule change is on page 15, lines 26 to 28. And that requires that if you're going to give evidence of a relevant trade practice, that party must give the other party notice so that there's no unfair surprise. That's something we haven't done very often, but it's fair in this particular case because they're getting into something that the other side might not anticipate. And that's why that is there. The other question is what's called a self-authenticating clause.
Right.
And that is on page 16, lines 10 to 15. And normally, you have to authenticate a document. This makes them self-authenticating, which makes it easier to introduce, but still allows the other party to defeat that authentication or to challenge it. And I would, with that introduction, turn it over to Professor Henning.
Professor Henning.
Well, with regard to page 6, let me start on page 16, line 10, because I was working through that, and I'm going to have to come back to what's on page 15. I don't have in front of me what your current court rule might be, but again, this current section 45.01.307, so in the uniform version it would be Article 1, Section 1-307, is based on former Section 1-202, and I am looking at it, and they are virtually identical. There is a slight styling change so that the old language was it shall be prima facie evidence, and our new language and our new style is that it is prima facie evidence. But once again, my answer here is the same as previously. This rule, as far as Article 1 of the Uniform Commercial Code, goes all the way back to the inception of the code.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunberg.
Just for your information, Professor, we basically have the federal rules of evidence. And evidentiary rule 403 was the dealing with the stuff on page 15. The second one would deal with, and by the way, 403 is the general rule of relevance, quote, although relevant, evidence may be excluded if its probative value is outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice, confusion of the issues, or misleading the jury, or by considerations of undue delay, waste of time, or needless presentation of cumulative evidence. That, for the members of the committee, is the general evidence rule. 907 is... 902, thank you. 902 is the self-authentication provision that lists those documents that are self-authenticating, Professor. This is, I believe, the standard federal rule. Does that help you in your answer?
Yes, I think this is entirely consistent with that. With regard to the material on page 10, which is the provision on excluding evidence of a relevant trade usage unless the other party has been given notice. Am I tracking correctly that that was what your question was in reference to?
Yes, it was.
So it's that subsection G, line 26 on page 15. Not being an expert on the federal rules, but having just heard your explanation, this again is a rule that has always been in the code. It's not a burden shifting device in any sense. The burden of persuasion would still be on the party seeking to show the existence of a trade usage. It's to avoid unfair surprise, and this now is in section 1303, but it goes back to section one, old section 1205, subsection 6. And is unchanged. So I think that there are no changes in the Uniform Commercial Code in either of these instances, and from the explanation you gave me, it sounds as if they would be quite consistent with the federal rules that are governing in this situation.
Thank you. Questions from members?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to belabor the point. I don't know that I'm totally up to speed. I don't have contention. I just want to understand better. And so I will do some more studying on it because both Section 303 and 307 are covered under this particular court rule. And because of what I've read in the bill on the difference between possessing a bill of lading, for example, and being in control of it, I was just wondering how that might affect how we're dealing with this prima facie evidence, and I was trying to make the correlation, that's all.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Coghill, when we were working this bill up, and Terry Bannister was the drafter, and we took a sort of conservative approach on indirect amendments, we're not 100% certain that these changes, these updates to the UCC will in fact result in standards that are different than would occur under the court rules as they stand. But we did agree that in order for us to come into sort of the modern age on the UCC provisions, we needed to do this, even if it meant amending the court rules. Perhaps I misunderstood the call of your question, or perhaps Professor Henning didn't speak as directly to it as we might want him to. But my understanding is these provisions of the revised Uniform Commercial Code are consistent with other uniform acts that the conference has developed, except to the extent some of those might not yet have been updated to track with this approach. And if we can get you further information on this, we would be more than happy to do that.
All right. I will just use that as a place to do some study, Mr. Chairman. I won't belabor the point.
Other questions? Terry, what should we be concerned about in looking at this piece of legislation? I appreciate that it was carefully drafted, and we very much appreciate the experts that were brought forward. This is a Labor and Commerce sponsored bill. Taking the contrarian point of view, what concerns should we have about updating the UCC? Uniform Commercial Codes to be in compliance with the other states?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's hard for me to take the contrarian view on that because as to the UCC provisions, and again, I'm not going to speak to the other provisions, but as to the UCC provisions, there is support, wide support nationally from the warehousing industries. The business section of the Alaska Bar Association is fine with this. And I suppose it may very well be that it's not urgent that we do these updates, but if we're going to stay on track with the rest of the country when we've got 35 states and five others are working on one of these sections this year, ourselves included, five total and then three on the other. So we have other states coming into the fold. We're rapidly approaching 40 states. Having gone to the revisions, we're potentially slipping behind in Alaska, especially as to the warehousing provisions, where the operators like Federal Express and others might find that our failure to update these make it a little bit more dicey to do business in Alaska.
Yes.
So I don't see a downside to the UCC provisions.
Yes, ma'am, and I agree with you, and I'm mindful that we just lost 68 FedEx pilots out of Anchorage, and that Ted Stevens' freight cargo is down 30%. So I'm, they say here you should never ask a question you don't know the answer to. And so I share your point of view that updating this keeps Alaska current and consistent and in conformity with other states. So I appreciate that point of view and happen to agree with you and appreciate your help. Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Terry, do you feel that, and again, I know you can't guarantee this, but by us becoming compliant with a majority of the states, do you feel our shipping rates will be affected in a positive manner, or this might help us with the companies that believe we're not in the continental United States when we call to order things in other states?
Through the chair, Representative Dahlstrom, I think it would be presumptuous of me to assume we're going to see any relief in that regard. I share your annoyance that the outside vendors add on charges to shipping to Alaska, but I don't think this will necessarily give us, as a state, the leverage to get them to be a little bit more reasonable. We'll probably have to do what we've been doing all along and boycotting some of those vendors if they don't get reasonable with their shipping.
I think what Representative Dahlstrom is asking is if your Xbox 360 starts to go red and you live in Nome and you have a post office box and you want them to send you a replacement, is this going to help in that effort at all?
Mr. Chairman, I can add this much. It may help if you end up having to sue them in Alaska that you have consistent laws. It may make the litigation process a little simpler.
Well said. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is actually kind of following up on what you two were saying. This part of the conversation is very interesting, and I was hoping that you could help elaborate. I mean, what problems is this going to address? The warehouse problem? What, if you look at the different provisions, what benefit to Alaska in sort of a big picture layman's terms are we going to hopefully see by adopting these? I know there are electronic record sessions in here as well. I mean, what in a day-to-day, what kinds of things is this going to do for us?
Well, Representative Holmes, through the chair, I don't know that this is going to do anything to solve a particular problem we have in Alaska. It really is meant to just bring us up to the modern age along with the other states. And it's certainly not going to hurt for us to be able to say, if we're trying to attract people to do business here, that we have adopted the most modern version of the Uniform Commercial Code. But I can't put my finger on any particular problem that might be either unique to Alaska or occurring in Alaska that this is going to solve. But maybe Professor Henning, who is more intimately familiar with the provisions, could.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, if I may, I didn't necessarily mean unique to Alaska, but obviously when the Uniform Commercial Code's updated, it's because they've learned new, better ways to do certain things. So I didn't necessarily mean that it had to be unique to Alaska, but like the electronic records updates, can you give us kind of a 5-second on where this comes from and why this is helpful in general?
Representative Holmes, I'll give you my sense of it, and I would encourage us to let Professor Henning, chime in if he could add that. What we heard when we were doing the workup to this to see if we should pursue this bill is that with the warehousing provisions especially and doing things with electronic signatures and that we are behind the times, and they are already practicing, if you will, their businesses in the way that this law will put them in conformity with. And so our laws have fallen a little bit behind the times in terms of the reality of how the big shippers and the warehouse entities are dealing with bills of lading and proof of title. And with that, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, if Professor Henning has something he'd like to add, I'd sure appreciate hearing from him.
Absolutely. Professor Henning, on that point.
Yes, I'll be happy to speak on this. I think it's fair to say that in both of these cases, the improvements are incremental, but let me place it in a little bit broader context. During the 1990s and to about 2000 or 2001, there was a major effort to revise the Uniform Commercial Code generally, and one of the rationales for the revisions was to create a neutral playing field so that things that could be done previously only in writing could now be done electronically. there were revisions to articles. The most important is Article 9, which became effective nationally and in Alaska in 2001. But there were also revisions in the 1990s to Article 8, to Article 5. There was a new Article 4A on wire transfers of funds. And one of the last articles to come along was Article 7. In the meantime, while all of this was going on, the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act was promulgated, and I just checked online, and Alaska has adopted the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, and the definitions of control and the nature of obtaining control that are in Article 7 are built precisely on the model that was created by the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act. So allowing Article 7 or providing in Article 7 for electronic certificates of title does two or three things. One, it helps knit the rest of the Uniform Commercial Code together so that as a whole it's dealing with electronic records. Secondly, as was indicated just a moment ago, we're really behind the times. The warehouses and the shippers in the United States have been using electronic documents for years and just hoping that the courts would get things right if matters were litigated. And so it seems appropriate for us to validate the practices that are already going on out there in the community. With regard to Article 1, it's sort of a capstone at the end of this massive set of revisions. Article 1 is general provisions that interrelate to all the other provisions of the code. And by the time you had amendments to 9 and 8, and I won't repeat all of them, Article 1, frankly, had some sort of dangling loose ends that didn't connect properly any longer. And so the revision to Article 1 is really to bring the entire Uniform Commercial Code together and make all of the pieces fit. And so there is incremental value in validating electronic documents under Article 7, and I think there's value in making the Uniform Commercial Code coherent by adopting Article 1. But I do agree that that these are incremental changes, but I can't think of a single negative, and I can think of although not earth-shaking, some real positives.
Thank you, Mr. Henning. If I'm going to be moving incrementally, I would like to be moving incrementally toward a more refined practice of commerce that connects us better with the world and with the lower 48. So I thank you very much for your comments. Are there any other questions from committee members? With that, Terry, we thank you very much for your assistance. Mr. Henning, Mr. Kerr, we thank you very much. We will close public testimony at this point. I don't see anybody in the room who wishes to testify on this subject. Terry, again, thank you very much for your presentation. With that, I'll bring it back to the committee. Is there any discussion? Representative Dahlstrom?
I wish to make a motion.
Thank you. Any questions, any amendments from the members? I don't see any. Representative Dahlstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to make the motion for the CS for House Bill number 102-26-LS0059-S with attached zero physical note and individual recommendation.
Thank you. And without objection, HB 102 passes from committee. Representative Gardner, would you come forward and take us through HB 15, and then we have one young person who wishes to testify after you, and they're on a 2 o'clock time limit. So I would ask the members after Representative Gardner's initial presentation to allow Michaela to come up, and then at that point we can bring the bill sponsor back up for any questions if that's acceptable
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, it's you and Noah. We're happy to have you before the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for hearing House Bill 15. For the record, I'm Berta Gardner. I represent Midtown Anchorage District 24. And I think that just about any legislator who's done any serious door knocking has heard from constituents who want to ban use of cell phones by drivers. And it was one of the major topics. There had been a few accidents in my district, and there was a big topic of conversation for a while. And I've been thinking about it for actually several years. There's several ways of approaching this. One would be to ban all cell phone use by drivers of motor vehicles. I think that there would be a significant degree of opposition to that. One proposal, which is recently passed in California, was to ban cell phone use unless it was hands-free. And I think that that may or may not be an improvement. I don't know if the figures are out, but to me, it isn't the use of your hand, having your hand out, doing something that causes the problem. It's having your brain engaged in a way that's separate from driving. A one-armed person could be a very safe driver. So it's not the arm, it's the brain. Just last week, I heard from a gentleman who told me that he was crossing the street, and there was a car ready to make a right-hand turn. He says he walks a lot in Anchorage, and he's very, very careful to make sure that drivers around him make eye contact, and he knows. And there was a young woman on a cell phone, and he looked at her, looked her in the eye. He nodded, stepped off the curb, and she came around the corner, and he woke up in the hospital. So I think there's sort of a broad consensus that there is a need to do something about driving. My plan then was to just start with minors. We have precedent in a lot of different ways for treating minors slightly differently from adults. We have temporary driving permits with special provisions. We have the drinking and smoking laws and things for their health and welfare. And I think there'd be a less opposition and more likelihood of getting through legislation that bans cell phone use by minors who are driving. And Noah Hansen, my aide, has a lot more at his fingertips, the statistics and the percentage of our licensed drivers in Alaska who are minors and the number of accidents they have and the seriousness and the frequency with which those accidents have a cell phone use implicated in them. So.
Hi, Noah. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Noah Hansen. I am staff to Representative Gardner. And data from Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, I got from 2002 to 2006, about one-third of the crashes in Alaska involving cell phone use was from the ages 16 to 20. Those are just the ones that are known. Highest crash fatality rate is among 16 and 17-year-olds in the United States. 63% of teen passenger deaths occur when other teenagers are driving. These statistics are so high because young drivers do not have the skill level or experience as older drivers. Minors, when learning to drive, need to keep their focus on the road to drive properly. Teenagers already have a very high accident rate. You can see this in the insurance costs and other statistics that are out there. By removing their ability to use cell phones while driving decreases the opportunity to have them cause more accidents. Research shows that overwhelmingly majority of crashes involving teen drivers are due to failure to comply with safe operating techniques. Bans for minors for cell phones are not uncommon. 17 states already have them in place. States are introducing graduated licensing. We have a provisional driver's license. After the permit stage, for 6 months, a person from 16 to 18 years old has to drive. They cannot drive between midnight and 5 a.m., and also they cannot have peers in the vehicle with them. As Representative Gardner has stated, it's not the act of holding the phone to your ear. It's more the cognitive distraction of the conversation. When somebody else is in the vehicle with you, at least they have the knowledge of what is in front of you and can understand when stop talking and focus on the road. Already, the U.S. military has banned cell phone use for anybody on military property using a government vehicle. The penalty in this bill is a fine of not to increase $300. And other states, it's pretty similar. Minnesota has a $100 fine. New Jersey has a $250 fine for minors that are caught using their cell phone. In the bill, there it is a secondary offense. So a person 16 to 18 years old cannot be pulled over solely for using their cell phone. The purpose behind that is because a police officer cannot determine visually what the age is of the child. Let's see here. There is a universal provision. It is Alaska Statute 11.81.320, which if a teenager must use their cell phone and they're not in a safe environment to pull over and call somebody, like they are being followed or something like that, this statute exempt them from being cited.
Mr. Chairman, could you cite that again?
Can you cite that again, please?
It's Alaska Statute 11.81.320.
Thank you.
In Alaska, the age group, as I said earlier, 16 to 20 make up about 35% of the accidents involving a cell phone, though they only make up about 7.5% of the drivers on the road. And that's a big disproportionate among other drivers. And that is all I have right now.
Thank you. With your indulgence, I'm going to bring Michaela up, and then we'll have you come back up here shortly after that, because these kids have to leave in a few minutes, and we never want to miss the opportunity to allow young people to testify before our committee. So those of the rest of you that have an interest in testifying after Michaela shows you how easy it is, are welcome before the committee, before 2 o'clock. That's why I've allowed 15 minutes. Michaela, we are so happy to have you here. Would you please tell us your name, your age, your school, and any professional affiliations that you might have?
Okay. Okay, well, I'm Michaela Rice. I'm from Fairbanks. I go to Tannehill Middle School in 14, and I'm here in Juneau for the 4-H Youth in Government program, because in 4-H we do the different projects, and one of my projects is government and leadership, so that's why I'm here in Juneau. And earlier today we went to the legislative office, and we did a little practice session, and the bill that we practiced with was this one. So got my attention there, looking at it, and so I'm here to testify on that.
Outstanding. So with that, we would invite you to offer your testimony on the bill, and then Representative Lynn has a question for you.
Do you think it's fair that we ask your age, but the other people who come over to testify, we don't ask their age? is that discrimination? I'm going to start asking everybody who comes up here now, I think.
Michaela, you can ask Representative Lynn how old he is.
I'm 76. That's my age, not my IQ.
Okay. Which makes you eligible for the death penalty, I might add.
With some of these bills, I'd volunteer.
All right, Michaela, you may offer us your testimony. We're very happy to have you here.
Well, I disagree with the bill. There's a couple reasons why. The first one is it kind of takes away some of our freedoms as American citizens. And we have the freedom, it's our freedom, to use our phone while we're driving or to talk on our cell phones. One of my questions, which was answered, was why are cell phones distracting? If it's one hand, then hands free. But if it's the talking and it's the brain and everything, well, then isn't it also, shouldn't it also be illegal to eat because you have to grab and get your food or drink while you're driving? Soda. And and what about that mom with kids and the kids are fighting in the back? That's also distracting, but that's not illegal. So
it should be.
So that was one of my points, is because if it's the brain, well, there's so many things that we are allowed to do. We're allowed to listen to the radio. We're allowed to use a GPS system. We're allowed to eat, drink, have kids in the car. So there's different things that are also as distracting as a cell phone or more distracting. One thing I'd like to say is the bill does not specify what a minor is. It's specified other places, but not on this bill. So, and with the sponsor statement, the ages range from 16 to 24. So it's kind of confusing on what exactly is being considered a minor in this case. Also, this bill seems discriminatory. Everybody always looks at teens to yes.
You're doing great.
And nobody ever looks at the adults. One third of the accidents may be teens, but two thirds of those are adults. So they always look at the teens. One thing I'd like to say is if this bill is passed, it should be for everybody, not just teens, because adults can be just as bad. And it should either be everybody or it shouldn't be done, because this bill is discriminatory and everybody always looks at teens. Also, some supporters of this bill and people that are supportive of it are more supportive of the fact that there aren't cell phones being used, not as much as the minors and cell phones. And also, in an article I read about hands-free versus using the phone in general, the LA Times, and this was published on June 30th, 2008, stating that California and Washington have passed laws similar to only using hands-free. You can't have your hand up on your phone. But they say that that's just as distracting because of the brain and everything. So I guess what I'm just trying to say is that the reason I disagree with this is because cell phones aren't the most distracting thing, and also it's discriminatory. It should be either all or nothing. And the other thing I just like to say is sometimes when we're driving to Anchorage, my dad's driving to Anchorage for his military drill each month. That's the only way we know that he's doing fine. We'll call him to see if he's okay. And I mean, he could pull over, or if we're in town and we hear there's an accident or something, he might be in an area where he can't pull over. And so that's one thing. But basically, all in all, I disagree with this bill because it should either be all or nothing. So, thank you.
Michaela, you're a rock star. You are so articulate. That was, and I admire you to have the courage to speak against a bill. Well, very, very well done. And you brought up some salient points that are concerned shared by the chairman. But you have to sit still because there are some questions for you.
Okay.
But you did a superb job. Representative Lynn.
Thank you very much. Again, excellent testimony. And it's not politically correct, but I agree with you. I really do agree with you. You know, I think maybe you should stop picking on teenagers. The sponsor of the bill said it's easier to start with teenagers. Well, it is, because teenagers don't have the money to defend themselves from acts of politicians. They don't have lobbyists. It's fairly easy to pass a bill that affects a teenager as compared to a bill that basically attacks seniors. You guys are basically defenseless against us. And again, you know, you brought up, where does this thing stop? Would it stop with teenagers, or stop with seniors? Those who have a handicap parking thing on the windshield or license plate, should it be a similar law against fiddling with the radio or the CD or the heater? Mm-hmm. It's a cognitive thing, somebody said. It may be, but that means I can't sing with something that's on the radio. Well, the music you have on the radio now, I can't sing with it anyway. But where's this been to stop? I just think maybe it's time to put a halt on some of this stuff. Youth generally have faster reflexes than older people do, but you have limited experience. I've been driving 61 years. I have a lot of experience. My reflexes are pretty good, but they probably slowed down compared to yours. So, you know, it's a balancing thing, and I just wish we would back off on this thing and basically stop picking on teenagers. Now, I can say that because I know you're not in my district, and I know that that even if you are, you're too young to vote anyway. So I'm not saying that for political reasons. You know, I am getting a little bit tired of the whole thing. I may have more to say later.
Thank you. Michaela does live in my district, right? Where do you live? What neighborhood?
I'm in District 7 with Mike Kelly.
Oh, I see. Oh. Yeah.
But you can't vote.
You go to Tana.
I go to Tana, excellent. Yes.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill does discriminate against younger people. Would you support the bill if it was all-inclusive?
Representative Gatto, that's a good question. I would support it if it were all-inclusive. I feel that cell phones can be distracting, but in the case, it also doesn't specify in the bill whether that means hands-free or hands-on the phone. I'd prefer if it were to stay the way it is because of reasons where if I'm at home doing my homework and something happens and I'm calling my parents in, something they can't pull over, well, something could be getting worse at home. So I prefer it to stay like it is, but I would be more supportive of it if it were for everybody and not just minors.
Now, Michaela, I have a question for you. And you're pretty tough, so I'm gonna ask you a couple of tough questions.
Okay.
Your point was not lost on me that a third of the accidents are caused by teens, but two-thirds of the accidents are caused by adults.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that one-third of the drivers on the road are teens, or do you think that percentage is considerably lower?
I think that there are lower, especially if there's longer distance. So you'll probably, out of the teens, you're going to have more teens that live in Chino Hot Springs and Fairbanks be driving, or in North Pole be driving, than teens that live in town because they can walk closer. So I think it kind of depends on the area that you live. But driving through town or just walking, I don't see that many teens driving.
Which is my point. If let's say that only 10% of the drivers, and I think that probably overstates the teen driving force, mm-hmm. if only 10% of the drivers on the road are teens, but they're causing 35% of the accidents, don't mm-hmm. you think that we should do everything we can to minimize the accidents that are being caused by these people that are new to the rules of the road?
I think it could go farther into not as much with the cell phones in that. That's a responsibility, and that could be gone to the parents. But I think that in that case, it's not always the cell phone. Texting's been made illegal, which I think is a good one. I fully support that because that is with your hands. You can't text with your eyes. You can't do that, or ears. But I think that would go more into the education and what we use for the learner's permits and driver's license tests.
May I ask you another question?
Yes.
You tell me as soon as you've had enough, and I'll stop. But when you talk about discrimination against teens,
mm-hmm.
now it's legal in the state of Alaska to consume some alcohol mm-hmm. and get behind the wheel of a car.
Yes.
So anybody at this table who are adults could have a drink and mm-hmm. then decide to get behind the wheel of a car and drive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they consume too much alcohol, then it's illegal and you'd be driving mm-hmm. under the influence. But it would be illegal for a teen to have consume any alcohol and get behind the wheel of a car. Do you consider that discriminatory, or is that in conformity with our liquor laws?
I think that that's a health issue, and there's scientific biological facts that support that. Under the age of 21, our brains aren't fully developed, and neither are our bodies, and we can't deal with that as well. Alcohol has a greater effect on the body of a teenager than it does on an adult in most cases. And so what might be whatever, I shouldn't have used that word. Anyhow, for adults is 10 times worse for a teenager. So I think that that's a good law because it's reasonable for that reason.
Actually, Representative Gatto, I've had exchanges with Joe Balash, and they've amounted to the same conclusion, whatever. So, not limited to the purview of just teens. So, I can't believe you're only 14 years old. You have so much poise. You are a remarkable young lady.
And, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Michaela?
Good job.
Extraordinary you. Testimony. You are very, very composed, and I know that you all have somewhere else to be at 2 o'clock. But if you want to stay here and watch how this evolves through the second hour of the committee, you and the folks that you're with, or if you want to stay, we would be happy to help direct you to wherever you're supposed to be at 3 o'clock as the committee winds up today. Okay. So if you want to kind of confer with your group, but outstanding, excellent, exemplary job. Well done.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
I can't believe I'm 76.
Yeah. Is there anybody else? Is there anybody else from our youth in government? You did a great job, Michaela. Anybody else from our youth in government group that would like to testify on this bill? You're more than welcome. Anybody? Bueller? Bueller? just one moment, sir. One moment. All right, so you guys have to go at 2?
You have to be at UAS at 2:30.
Oh, okay, so Michaela really does need to go with you then, probably? Okay.
We'll find you.
Okay, great job, you guys. Michaela, superb. Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming before the committee.
Call them on your cell while you're en route.
You're welcome. Well done, Michaela. Sheldon, you're with us. Welcome. If you'll introduce yourself, or I'm sorry. Sir, you didn't sign up. Would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Yeah. My name is Albert Judson. Box 1151 Haynes. Zip code is 99827. I'm opposed to this legislation simply because the focus is only on minors. It's the use of cell phones while driving, and there's already a law in the books that says it's against the law to drive with one hand. I'm not sure if it's still on the books. It was when I was working as a patrolman. But it can be amended to say, well, anyone that uses a cell phone while they're driving, because that cell phone takes their focus off driving and makes it hazardous, not only for the driver, but for the pedestrians, for anybody else. And I'm not sure how many people have the percentage of accidents caused by people using cell phones. There's also a report that cell phones itself causes cancer, especially among young people. That's because the brain right around the skull, why the brain is thinner when they're younger. And I don't know what the occurrence is. I don't know the numbers on that, but that's out of Reader's Digest. And I would like to ask again why there's such an emphasis on minors in this legislature, because there's another law that they're trying to pass on minors taking CPR and first aid before they get a license. To me, that's an undue requirement on minors themselves. It's something I never had to go through, and I don't believe any minor should have to go through that. It's an undue burden, and it discriminates against the minors. There has to be a compelling reason for that. And, but that's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Albert. Are there any questions from any of the committee members for Mr. Judson? All right. Thank you so much for your testimony. We're going to proceed forward, and I do know that you came in before some of the previous testimony was given, and some of the same questions. Can you hear me? Some of the same questions that you asked were asked before.
Yeah.
And that is something the committee will discuss once we close public testimony. So thank you again for bringing them to our attention.
Oh, good. I'm not too far off base then.
No, we appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Representative Gardner, I think we'll bring you back up for any questions that committee members may have. Thank you very much for your indulgence with the young people. That was.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I respond to some of the previous testimony?
Yes, ma'am.
I was struck by the previous gentleman, Albert, saying there has to be a compelling reason, and he was referring to discrimination against minors. There has to be a compelling reason. I would posit that 7.8% of the drivers being involved with 35% of the accidents, as the chair was working on, is a compelling reason. It's just too disproportionate, and it's a safety issue not only for young drivers themselves, but for everybody on the road, for all of us. Let's see, the young lady from Fairbanks talked about the fact that we have different ages in the statistics in our sponsor statement, and that's simply because we're using studies and surveys from around the country that have surveyed different ages and different groups, so we don't know the breakdown of whether it's a 19-year-old who would not be impacted by this bill, or an 18-year-old or a 17-year-old who would be impacted by this bill. So I would say that for myself, I know that I am not as good a driver when I'm on the phone as when I'm off the phone, and I should never be on the phone when I'm driving. I know that for my own family, for my children, the rule in our house was you will not use the phone when you're driving on our car. That's just the rule. Some families aren't able to say that or enforce it, and if you say it's the law, hopefully that makes it a bigger impact. Now, I think there are some darn good reasons for making this be across the board, that nobody should drive while using a cell phone, except in certain circumstances. I think that's not unreasonable, but I know that there will be opposition to it. So if we can make the roads a little safer for a small part of the population, and maybe in 2 or 3 years when we see what impact it's had, then we might want to do it differently and apply it across the board. So sometimes just the fact that you can't get what you know is really the right thing, you just start out a little bit smaller and see where that gets you, and then move along from there.
I forget when, about a couple of years ago or so, we passed the graduated driver's license. And I can't recall what all the details on it were, but is there any way perhaps to mesh this with the graduated driver's license, or maybe is there three different stages to that? Maybe to put this on the first stage, but not the other two stages?
I believe the provisions through the chair of the graduated driver's license.
Oh, this is it here?
Apply to the first 6 months after somebody has a permit. That would be a very, very small window, and effectively, I think, probably pretty meaningless.
You said meaningless?
Meaningless to do it for only 6 months if we want to try to, say everybody under 18 or the whole state, as it were.
So just to give the members a sense here, first of all, Michaela got permission from her group to stay here. They were going to take a tour of UAS, and she's already seen it. So she came back to the committee room, and I invited her to sit here until Representative Gruenberg returns.
Much more attractive than
who usually sits here. You offered her a cookie.
Oh yeah. So far as professional testimony that we have available, Cindy Cashin is here with the Alaska Highway Safety Office. And we also have John Ilsicki from the National Safety Council when we have satisfied questions for the bill sponsor, and then a couple other people that are going to testify on their own behalf. So member questions for the bill sponsor, then we'll go to professional testimony and other offline testimony, and then we can come back to the bill sponsor if there are any questions.
One just quick question, Mr.
Representative Lane.
Is there a insurance person who's going to testify here today, insurance industry?
Yes. We have somebody from State Farm. Yeah. Sheldon Winters is here from State Farm in the back of the room, I think. So with that, I would ask members that have questions for the bill sponsor. Questions, Representative Holmes and then Dahlstrom?
Mr. Chairman, I have a number of questions, and I'm not sure whether they're better for the bill sponsor or whether there are experts that might be coming up later who could testify. Maybe I'll just run through them, and the bill sponsor can tell me if they should be deferred. The bill, does it just include automobiles, or would it also include ATVs and snow machines? Things like that.
Mr. Chair, if Noah Hansen could answer that, I know he's been talking with experts even as recently as a few hours ago about that specifically.
This is Noah Hansen. Through the chair, Representative Holmes, it would include, it possibly could include snow machines and ATVs on a vehicular way or path. And to get that answer done, I have not been able to get a hold of DMV to see which vehicular way or paths are acceptable for snow machine or four-wheeler or any other recreational vehicle. But at least from my point, it would be very difficult to use a cell phone with a snow machine or an ATV. You wouldn't even be able to hear what's going on.
That's a good point, Mr. Chairman.
Bicycle.
Representative Gatto.
The bicycle.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, no, that would not be included, because under the definition of motor vehicle, it states motor vehicle means a vehicle which is self-propelled, except a vehicle moved by human or animal power. So that would not include a bicycle.
Okay. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Not so much a question. I just wanted to correct one thing that you said for in the future. Representing two military bases, the law, the federal law, is not just anyone in a government vehicle on the base. It's anyone in any vehicle. And so if you are pulled over and arrested on a military base, you are then subject to federal law also, not state law. But it's not just government vehicles. So just want to clarify that for you.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple more, and one of them I think Noah already touched on, which is trying to get just a handle on what types of motor vehicles are covered and what types of roadways or paths. And it sounds like the bill sponsor's going to track that down for us. Another question is, I know we hear the stories every now and then under the DUI laws that somebody can be arrested even if they're just sitting in the passenger seat or they're pulled over. I take it the intent of this bill is you have to be sort of underway and talking on a cell phone. And I just want to make sure that as it's written, what we want to encourage is for people to make the call while they're parked in their car, not while they're driving in their car. And so I want to make sure that this law wouldn't apply if you were, for instance, pulled over on the side of the road and in park or parallel parked on the side of a road.
Through the chair, yes, the intent is while driving the vehicle, not just being in it.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Gatto?
You know, I feel almost foolish, but bicycles, horse-drawn vehicles, how about a walkie-talkie would be allowed, and it accomplishes the same thing, or any two-way? Did you mean to talk about any device that is able to communicate rather than the word cell phone?
Through the chair, if this committee wanted to address that, that would be fine. My intention was only cell phones.
Representative Gardner, I happen to support this bill because I'm familiar with teen drivers and the accidents that are statistically caused by people under the age of 24. Loud music, with food, with friends in the car, with cell phones, so I get it. And you make me nervous when you talk about it being the first step to incorporate everyone, although I travel in California a lot, and it's a law in California. And New York, I think, just did a raid on cell phone users this weekend and netted $1 million in fines or some unbelievable. It was like 8,500 drivers were busted for driving with using a cell phone. So the world is changing before our very eyes. That notwithstanding, Representative Gardner can stay in the room, is that correct? And so if we can go to some of the other testimony that we have and incorporate that and then come back and ask questions of the bill sponsor, if that's acceptable to the members. Thank you. So can we go to our friend Cindy Cashin first, and then we will move to some of our other... Hi, Cindy. Welcome.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Cindy Cashin, and I am the administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office. The Alaska Highway Safety Office administers federal transportation funds to data-driven programs which encourage safe driving behavior. We get our federal funding from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, which is a leg of the federal DOT. The policy statement from NHTSA on cellular phone use while driving is that it is the primary responsibility of the driver to operate a motor vehicle safely. The task of driving requires full attention and focus. Cell phone use can distract drivers from this task, risking harm to themselves and others. Therefore, the safest course of action is to refrain from using a cell phone while driving. NHTSA encourages states to pass laws which ban the use of cell phones. Research shows that driving while using a cell phone can pose a serious cognitive distraction and degrade driver performance. The data is insufficient to quantify crashes caused by cell phone use specifically, but NHTSA estimates that driver distraction from all sources contributes to 25% of all police-reported traffic crashes. As a general rule, drivers should make every effort to move to a safe place off of the road before using a cell phone. However, in emergency situations, NHTSA recommends that a driver can use their judgment regarding the urgency of the situation and the necessity to use a cell phone while driving. The available research indicates that whether it is hands-free or hand-held cell phone, the cognitive distraction is significant enough to degrade a driver's performance. So whether it's hands-free or handheld, this can cause a driver to miss key visual and audio cues needed to avoid a crash. And I wasn't going to mention this, but because Ms. Rice brought this up, I would like to provide some information based on research supported by NHTSA. Any activity a driver engages while driving has the potential to distract the driver from the primary task of driving. Some research findings comparing cell phone use to passenger conversations while driving show each to be equally risky, while others show cell phone use to be more risky. A significant difference between the two is the fact that a passenger can monitor the driving situation along with the driver and can pause for or alert the driver to potential hazards, whereas a person on the other end of the phone line is unaware of the roadway situation. And then the current research does not provide a definite answer as to which behavior is riskier. In a controlled study, it compared eating and operating a voice-activated cell phone to continuously operating a CD player. It was found that the CD player operation was more distracting than the other activities. In a test track study conducted by NHTSA, the results showed that manual dialing was about as distracting as grooming or eating, but less distracting than reading or changing CDs. And I'm explaining this to you so that you understand the depth of the study that went into looking at distracted driving. And I also want to repeat Mr. Hansen's statement that motor vehicle crashes are the leading cause of death for teens because of, these are three factors, inexperience, risk-taking behavior, and greater risk exposure. And when you combine that with a cell phone or a hands-free device, our studies, our data for national and state and within all our regions are way overrepresented for teenagers.
Thank you. Congratulations, Michaela. You're welcome to public policy. You're influencing somebody else's testimony with some of the testimony you provided. That's the first rule. You got her on the defense. You got the whole National Alaska Highway Safety Officer playing defense. Well done. Well done. That's why you're sitting in the front row. You're doing good. Are there questions for our friend Cindy, please? Representative Lynn and then Kaka.
Thank you. I see in the bill it doesn't differentiate between a cell phone you hold ear or hands free, and this may be more appropriate to the sponsor than to you, but probable cause, how can you tell it's probable cause if it's hands free? You just drive down the street and I guess you're moving your mouth. You could be chewing gum or singing or whatever. Maybe I should save that for the sponsor of the bill.
Well, through the chair, it's a secondary cause, and so the police already have to have a reason to pull the driver over for something else.
Okay.
Representative Kaka?
Sure. First of all, I don't know how you realize how much this lady has had an impact on public policy in Alaska, but mm-hmm. I think every year that I've been here, she's had influence on legislation, and so my gratitude to you. But one of the things I think the NHTSA should help with, and in Alaska specifically, is other areas where we've taken this cadre of people from 16 to 18, basically, and began to look at them. Since we put in the provisional driver's license, we have put several requirements on them, certain daylight hours, to and from work, had to have a parent in the car, and no teenagers. And so I wonder how we've done on policing that. And because of, we're taking a look at a secondary thing here, and I think it'll be just an interesting look at enforcement trends, I think. If we're going to put a new law in the books, I think we need to look at it.
Through the chair, there is something in the Strategic Highway Safety Plan, a strategy that addresses the effective graduated driver licensing elements. And what we would be doing with this plan would be what many other states have already done. We passed 2 or 3 years ago, actually 3 or 4 years ago, the graduated driver's license program, which has several components in it that are effectively, according to our data that we're collecting, saving teen lives and preventing injuries and crashes. The numbers are still way too high, but we are collecting the data. It's too soon to tell if the graduated driver's license has made an impact. We've only collected 2 to 3 years worth of data, but the motor vehicle crashes, the fatalities, and the injuries are beginning to drop. What is the most effective tool is enforcement. If the teens know that it's being enforced, they're going to drive more carefully. Now, House Bill 15 would, like I said just earlier, implement a proposal in the Strategic Highway Safety Plan. It's called Effective Graduated Driver Licensing Elements. And the proposal would upgrade the current Alaska Graduated Driver's License law to include provisions that reduce distractions by banning the use of cell phones. And according to the Strategic Highway Safety Plan data that was collected and analyzed, the average number of lives lost and major injuries sustained due to this problem over the past 5 years was 86 fatalities and 880 major injuries involving drivers between the ages of 16 and 20.
Mr. Chairman, just so that we understand, those are national statistics, if I understand correctly, or state-specific? Okay, thank you.
Over the past 5 years.
Okay, thank you.
With full implementation of this portion of the graduated driver's license, the cell phone ban, and other related action plans, and by this we mean the overall graduated driver's license program, we expect a 10% reduction in young driver fatalities, major injuries, and crashes within 3 years of implementation.
I am such a believer of what you just said. I employ a lot of young people, and I had a beautiful young 16-year-old that worked for me who was, worked at the Kushma Food Factory, broke up with her boyfriend, had the volume cranked way over, and on her stereo, crying, and was hit, and by the grace of God, she's still alive. But I mean, it's just case after case after case of young people that just, a myriad of distractions. So thank you very much for that point of view. Representative Gatto, and then Representative Dahlstrom.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Cindy, the terms operating and driving, are they interchangeable?
I'm sure they're not, and I believe that Annie Carpinetti is in the room and could probably address that difference.
Thank you. Representative Dahlstrom, we can get to her when it's appropriate time.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Cindy, there's a couple questions I have. I know that some you can answer and some maybe for Annie and then some for the insurance agent who's with us. I'm curious to know, one, if insurance companies consider the age of 24 still a teenager. I'm also curious to know about people who are between the ages of 18 and, above 18 and 24 who are doing a job that is considered a commercial driver job. Now, some of them, taxis, maybe have a radio built in. We have other medical volunteers in the state who don't all have access to, a radio in their car with a CB type thing. They have become reliant on cell phones, or some of them have radios in their car that will give them information, but then they call in. They don't have a two-way response. So I wonder how that would affect that, how this law would affect, again, as I stated, volunteer fire and police departments around the state. And then also, what about young men and women that participate in the cadet training program at police departments, that they currently use their cell phones while they are on the job, so to speak? how would this stop them from being able to have that opportunity?
Well, through
and I know those aren't all for you, so but
through the chair, the first question would definitely be for Mr. Winters from State Farm, and as to the second set of questions, that this would only apply to drivers up to 18, and once you have a driver that would be driving with the in a commercial vehicle, they would fall under the commercial vehicle laws. However, that is the extent of my knowledge, and so it would probably be best to have another expert address that the driver specifics about commercial vehicle or NOAA.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? All right. Thank you, Cindy. We appreciate it. Will you be able to stay if there's additional questions?
Yes.
All right. Noah, would you like to come and address those questions, and then we'll go to Mr. Winters next, if that's possible.
This is Noah Hansen. Would you be able to repeat those questions for me? I lost most
of them. You bet. Basically, I'm interested in knowing what happens to folks who are working for volunteer police or fire safety slash programs, you know, EMT, first responders, people who are in the cadet training program, or somebody who's operating a commercial vehicle and their cell phone allows them to find out where they're being dispatched next, or
through the chair, I do not know exactly if this bill would exempt them or not. I would not think it, but it just seems to me that those people would not be under 18. At least maybe the volunteers for firefighters, paramedics, whatever it may be.
Representative Gatti, you might know the answer to this. It seems to me the volunteer fire department's 16 is the age. But I couldn't swear on that. But no. So we'll have to look into that. Okay, so my confusion, I guess, came from just the sponsor statement where we talk about people aged 16 to 24, but the actual bill on page 5 states a person under 18. Okay. All right. Are there any other Representative Gatto?
Yeah. We often see volunteers with blue lights, and those are the people who are saying, where? How do I get there? Which way do I turn? They're more likely, and I'm not sure if 18 may be younger than 18. So it's a valid consideration because they'll take volunteers because you can't get them very comfortably.
Through the chair, that is something that I will look into for you.
All right. Thank you, Noah. Right. Oh, Representative Lynn, I apologize.
Yeah, no problem. If a teenager is driving and the cell phone rings while you're driving, must they ignore the cell phone and then pull over until they can answer the cell phone? By that time, it's probably stopped ringing. And of course, it could be a phone call from their mom or dad for an emergency of some kind. So what do you just ignore?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, yes, it would be any use of the cell phone that you would be prohibited from doing. So you would, if they were able to pull over, they would, once they are over, they would be able to use it then. Or if they are in an emergency situation, they would be exempted from that.
But you, the cell phone rings, you just ignore it, I guess, until should leave the phone number on there, of course. Then pull over, and then you can see who it was that called and answer if you choose.
Through the chair, as I understand it, yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Noah. I'm sure you'll stay with us through this. If we could have come forward, please, Mr. Winters. Thank you for being here with us, and if you'd state your name and affiliation.
Good afternoon. My name is Sheldon Winters. I'm a lobbyist for State Farm Insurance Companies. I'm not an insurance agent. I'm not an underwriter. I practice law here in Southeast Alaska. When I'm not here doing this type of work, I'm primarily an insurance defense lawyer. I've been involved in hundreds of automobile accident cases, so I have that perspective. As a side note, I have a 15-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter, who, much to my chagrin, are awesome text messengers, so and cell phone users. I have a couple brief points that I want to bring in, and I'll try to answer some of the questions that have been answered to the best of my ability. The first question that I saw when I was looking at this bill is, what was the amount of cell phone use by teenagers while driving? And I saw some of the statistics in your package, and frankly, I think they're understated. In 2006, State Farm went and performed a nationwide survey with an alliance with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And the statistical sampling of that was basically representative of all 10.6 million teenagers in our country in the public school system. And what those teenagers told us was this. 9 out of 10 said cell phone use while driving was very common. They said 7 out of 10 had observed teenagers using a cell phone while driving while being very emotionally upset. Okay, this is the teenagers telling us what they saw. Not somebody out trying to study and catch them at the right moment. This is what they have told us. In my own experience with my own kids, I think that's pretty commonplace as far as the use of cell phones. The second and more important question that I thought about when I looked at this bill is whether this law will do any good. It's secondary enforcement. You know, I like to think my kids do what I tell them to do and why I tell them to do it. But the reality is, if I'm lucky, that's about 50% of the time. They do, however, I hope, obey the law. And that's where this bill comes into play. I can tell my kids that is the law. And it gives me credibility, and they will follow it. It goes back to another question that State Farm asked the teenagers on this survey. And that was, what was the primary motivator? Why would you not use cell phone usage while you're driving? Was it safety or because your parents told you so? The primary motivating factor for teenagers in not using cell phones is because it's the law and there are consequences. Now, you've been given some statistics in your package about teenage accident rates, and they're dramatic and they're telling and they're compelling. And sometimes I like to rely on them. But on the other hand, sometimes they take away the human element of it all. And I have seen hundreds of accidents ranging from the whiplash case, I don't mean to downplay them, they all have their own consequences, to the very tragic. And the most tragic in my mind are the ones involving our young kids. This bill will save some lives. 1, 2, 3, I can't tell you how many it will, but it will save some lives. This is part of a nationwide trend prohibiting cell phone usage by teenage drivers. I believe that if this bill does not pass now, we will be back here in 2, 3, 4 years getting it again, and Alaska by that time will be behind the eight ball. And in the meantime, there will be some of our teenagers that have died in an accident while using cell phones. So I would encourage you to pass this bill now rather than later. Questions that were asked and points that were raised. There was an amusing question, and I think it was fairly serious too, from Representative Lynn about why are we picking on teenagers. I wasn't quite prepared to answer that question, but I do remember when we passed the graduated driver's license bill back in 2004, I believe it was, we saw some studies, and those studies showed us that teenagers aren't like us. They have immature brain development. They get distracted much more so and much more easily than we are. And so we're not picking on them, we're protecting them. I like to look at it the other way. Maybe the adults aren't the ones that are worth saving with this bill, but the teenagers are our prized possessions. Those are the ones we need to pass this bill for. There was a question about the effectiveness by Representative Coghill about the effectiveness of the GDL, and I don't have the exact answer for that too, but I was looking in your bill packet and I saw some statistics that teenage driving accidents went down in 2006 fairly dramatically. We passed the GDL in 2005. I know I'm going to be asked about insurance rates, and all I can tell you is this. Claims drive rates. That's a fact. That's all there is to it. The amount of claims, the amount of accidents, the severity of those claims, that drives the rates. 16 to 21-year-old young persons have the highest rates because they have the highest accidents and the highest claim rate. But this bill, just like the GDL bill, is not about reducing insurance rates. It really isn't. It's about saving lives. And for that reason, we would encourage you to pass this bill. I'll try to answer any questions I can.
Just a quick question, Mr. Winters. If you had your perfect world, would this bill exclude all cell phone talking while driving from any age?
Madam Chair, I believe it does. I'm not sure what you're asking.
If you had your choice, would it be illegal for anyone to talk on the cell phone while they were driving?
That's what this bill does.
This is 16.
Oh, okay.
Minors.
State Farm does not have a position on that. If it were me, I would say yes. That's okay. My personal preference.
I think I saw the sequence of Gatto and then Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then Holmes.
I have a strong concern for dead teenagers. But for every dead teenager, there's probably a fixed ratio of injured, and included in that are severely injured. Do you know those numbers? Is it 10 to 1, 9 injuries for every death, or?
I do.
Representative Gatto, I really don't know that answer. I can certainly try to look into that.
You know, in wartime, we have the number of fatalities for soldiers, but we bring home 10 times that many injured. And I just wondered if in driving, it's, and I've been to thousands of traffic accidents in my career, thousands. Alcohol just drove me crazy. I always smelled for it. But the number of injuries is so common compared to the number of fatalities. So if you could find that out, I'm just curious because I think it's important.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you. You did anticipate my question. I don't know how you did that, but you did. Everybody says there are going to be fewer accidents, and of course, then are the insurance rates going to go down? And you said that's not important, but gee whiz, you know, the rates for all of us are high, but for teenagers, insurance rates are astronomical. And so will it go down at all?
Representative Lynn, I'm not so sure if I said insurance rates aren't important. I said that's not what this bill is about, but.
I'm a poor man because I've got six kids who went through the teenage insurance years. Sure.
Everything we do to reduce the amount of claims has a positive influence on the premiums. Can I say that this bill, if it saves two lives, will reduce the premiums in the state of Alaska? No, I can't. But right now there's a bill about booster seat legislation that's going to help prevent injuries for booster seats. There's this bill. There's everything we can do to make our traffic safety laws better. And those will have an impact. They will have a positive impact on rates.
There's more, but I made my point.
Tyla Wasson, that was the name of the young lady that worked for me as a 16-year-old cashier. And she now lives in assisted living home. Representative Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, I was just curious. When I was 14 and got my learner's permit, I didn't have a cell phone. I guess there weren't cell phones. I was kind of the last couple of years of teenagers who didn't have cell phones. And I'm just curious if through the 90s and this decade, we've seen the accident rate among teenagers go up as cell phones became more prevalent, or is there any way to correlate that and sort of figure that out if things have gotten, because we know they're going to have a higher accident rate anyway. They're not as familiar, they're still learning how to drive. But.
Representative Holmes, I can't quote you the study. I believe that they are seeing, obviously, more accidents related to more cell phone use because it's becoming more prevalent. I mean, it has dramatically increased. And I wish I could tell you off the top of my head what that has, but just in the last couple of years, it's remarkable how much our kids use cell phones. So you're going to see that. I think in some senses, you have the balancing of many, many states have passed graduated driver's license bills, and they have been effective, and we're seeing that. So there's been a reduction on the one hand in accidents, but we also have these other things we're still working on. And I think that what you'll see in the next few years is you'll also see some of these agencies come back before you and try to make the graduated driver's license bills even stronger. I know that's a nationwide movement right now, too. So I guess to sum up on that, I believe cell phone usage is causing more accidents, but just because of the fact there are so many people using them all the time now. And if I could find some statistics, I'll try to provide those.
Thank you. Any more questions? We thank you very much for your testimony today, Sheldon. I'd like to go to public testimony now, and then finally we'll go to John Yosicki with the National Safety Council last. First, I'd like to go to Roy Hoyt in Homer. Mr. Hoyt, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome, Mr. Hoyt. If you'd introduce your name and any affiliations for the record.
Okay, my name is Roy Hoyt, Jr. I live at my address, Box 2121, Homer. And I have been a licensed driver and airplane pilot since 1942. And I don't think this bill goes far enough. It should be all-inclusive. My experience in our little cosmic hamlet here has been that the people in the age range, and this is just guessing, of the 30s have caused more near accidents with cell phones where I have been involved than the teenagers. In fact, I rarely see a teenager with a cell phone. On your thing here, it should be when a vehicle is in motion and people can pull over, there's always a way to do that. If somebody calls you and your phone rings, let it ring, and then when you can stop, you can make the call back. These phones will give you the number that called you. And like I say, it should cover everything from the younger folks on up through us geezers and geezerettes that are driving around and have cell phones in our pocket.
Thank you. Mr. Hoyt, a question for you. Are you driving right now?
No, I'm sitting here in the LIO right now. But I drove down here, and I do a lot of driving, and I'm 82 plus.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Hoyt this afternoon? Mr. Hoyt, thank you very much for weighing in. We appreciate your testimony. Can we next go to Jenny Morris, please, in Anchorage?
I'm here.
Hi, Jenny. If you'll introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yeah, it's Jenny Morris.
And your testimony?
Yeah, I want to ask you about this.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, because I had I was hit two years and a half. I got hit on May 11, 2006, and again on January 2, 2008. And both people that hit me, they were both on their cell phone. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you, Jenny. Are there questions for Ms. Morris?
Just if
Representative Coghill.
Thanks, Jenny, for showing up to testify. Were either one of those under 18?
No, they were. Well, the first one was 24 years, and the other one's 19. But you know, right now it's 2009. So if the second kid was 19, he's only 1 year. Because I'm thinking about these people, you know, because the cell phones, probably, what, 3 years or something? So that's the problem. All the kids who aren't 18 right now, but say if they're, you know, 15 or 16, they're starting it now, and that's the problem. So, I mean, I think it should be everybody. But I understand what Berta was talking about that. I understand what she's saying. But my thing is, I'm tired of getting hit. I am tired of getting hurt. I'm scared for my family. I'm scared for my friends. I cannot believe that I cannot leave my house and go 5 miles away and end up in a hospital because somebody is on their phone instead of looking where they're driving. Something has to be done about this. I mean, you know, so I really, really, I appreciate all of you, by the way, for letting me talk. We've got to do something about it. It's not getting better. And I'm very thankful I'm alive. The first one that I got hit in May of 06, I still have to have surgery on my neck and my shoulder from that kid. I mean, it's just not fair that, you know, that we should have to pray before we go out and drive and just hope that we make it home. I mean, that's just not, it's not right. So I would appreciate anything you guys can do. I understand that it's difficult for some, but be in my shoes. See if, you know, if your daughter, your sister, your mom, your dad, your granddaughters, you know, kids, if they get hit, see how you feel about it. That's all I'm asking.
Thank you. Any other questions for Jenny? We thank you very much, Jenny, and God bless you. Stay well and healthy, two times more than anybody else should be hit, so take care of yourself. With that, can we please go to John Yosicki with the National Safety Council, please? John, are you with us?
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee and ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure to be with you today. Thank you for the invitation. I'm John Yelchuski, Group Vice President for Research, Communications, and Advocacy for the National Safety Council. Our mission is to save lives and prevent injuries. We're a non-governmental organization. We have a membership of about 20,000 member companies and organizations representing a cross-section of American business and industry. You may recall that on January 12th, we became the first national organization to ask that state legislatures across the country ban all cell phone use by all drivers while operating a motor vehicle. Now, we didn't arrive at this policy proposal. Well, we arrived at it after many years of study. We reviewed more than 50 studies and all found some measure of driver performance is affected by the cognitive distractions of cell phones. The effects of cell phone conversations are varied. They may include decreased reaction times, increased deviations within people's lanes, and certainly increases in steering wheel movements and oversteering. But the bottom line is, for all age groups, cell phone use while driving increases your risk of a crash by 4 times. The next time you do it, you will be 4 times more likely to be in a crash. Now, I know from the conversations I heard today on this call and in your hearing that we've got a massive educational job ahead of us to educate people about the risks of distractions. It's obvious, and I hear it every day. I have 6 kids myself who I train to drive, and they express the same some of the same beliefs as some of the people talking today in your hearing, that there's a wide misunderstanding about the level of different kinds of distractions. Let me put it simply. Talking on a phone is much more dangerous than eating a hamburger, drinking coffee, listening to the radio, singing, listening to music, even using a two-way radio or talking to passengers. Those things are minuscule in terms of their crash risk, and if anyone would like to examine the science, I'd be happy to share it with them. We've got to focus on the most serious distractions that go on in a vehicle, and those are cell phones. Now, let me be clear. There are more dangerous things we can do behind the wheel than talk on a cell phone. A couple of them are reading a newspaper or putting on makeup or reaching in the back seat and taking our eyes and our hands and our brain off the wheel and off our line of vision to deal with something like children or a moving object in the back seat. But fortunately, far fewer behaved people engage in those 3 higher risk activities, and they engage in them for much lower periods of time. The numbers of people engaged in cell phone use, we estimate to be over 100 million people. There are 270 million cell phone subscribers in the United States, and over 80% of them admit to talking on a cell phone while driving. Now, we know that cell phone use is part of our culture and that changing the laws to totally ban this behavior among the adult population is going to be very difficult. I understand that. I know that most Americans don't understand the magnitude of the risk they assume when they talk on the phone. It's a culture change, but our organization is up to it. We have people in our organization who remember back in the 1970s when people didn't view drunk driving the way they did today, where people thought that they could drink six or eight beers and drive safely, and that was part of our culture. We've now come to understand that that's not true, and I think years from now we will look back on this time and have the same recognition. Why were we so slow to understand the science? We'll need the same kind of change in social norms with cell phones. For example, today, when we ride in a car with a spouse or a friend who's had too much to drink, most of us today would insist on getting behind the wheel and driving. But I wonder how many of us, when we're riding with a spouse or a friend who's talking on the cell phone while they're driving, insist on taking the wheel because that driver, that friend, that spouse is putting both of us at four times more risk of being in a crash. That's the kind of social norm we've got to take on. And when we get to that social norm change, then I understand the laws will be easier to pass. So the challenge is significant. But I applaud you for starting by focusing on the highest risk group, and that is teens, and the highest risk activity, which is text messaging. I applaud the legislature for your passage of HB 88 last year that prohibited the use of computers, television, text messaging while driving, and I applaud Representative Gardner and the legislature for considering this bill to address cell phone use by our most at-risk citizens on our roads today, and that's teenagers. You've heard the data in Alaska. Nationally, it's very comparable. Teens are involved in fatal crashes at much higher rates than any other age group. Nationally, 6% of licensed drivers are teenagers, and they account for 14% of fatal crash involvement. And as you've heard today, the two main causes are driving inexperience and distractions. And that's why many states have enacted graduated licensing law that require teens to get significant experience with their parents before they can drive unsupervised. It's why many states have enacted passenger restrictions to keep teens from being distracted. And it's why 18 states have the kind of teen cell phone ban that your state is considering today. Teens are the group most likely to be in a crash, so I don't think it's discriminatory, as we heard the suggestion today. I don't think it's discriminatory to focus on the highest risk group. It's also the group most willing to engage in this behavior. 60% of teens in a National Public Opinion Survey indicated that they use a cell phone while driving. But even more alarming, 40% of them say that they regularly text message while driving. I encourage you to pass this legislation, and furthermore, I encourage you to support the police officers in Alaska in their enforcement of this law. What we know from other states is that enforcement of this kind of law is critical. If people do not believe that a law will be enforced, then they're more likely to engage in breaking that law. And this is true, I'm sure all of us know, it's true in many areas of traffic safety, particularly speeding. Why do people speed? Because they can. And it's the same thing that will be true with cell phones. In states that have enacted teen cell phone bans, such as North Carolina, studies by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety have determined that compliance with the law increased and decreased almost proportionately with the level of enforcement applied. If a law is visibly enforced and people believe, in this case teens, believe they will be caught, then the behavior will change. If they do not believe they will be caught, if the law is weakly enforced, then it may do little to deter teens from talking on the phones because they believe their chances of being caught are low.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for an opportunity to speak with you today. I wish you well with your effort to save lives.
Thank you. Are there questions for John? A very thorough presentation. We thank you very much. Representative Gardner, do you want to pop back up and see if there are questions for the sponsor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Annie Carpinetti is here, and she has made a suggestion. And I don't know, did you want to testify? Okay, thank you. On line 10, where the wording is probable cause, it should actually read reasonable suspicion. That's the standard.
Suspicion. Very good. Thank you. Are there questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Gatto?
I just wanted to get back. Is Annie coming up here? To
Annie is very welcome. Are there questions for the bill sponsor at this time? Seeing none, we thank you, Representative Gardner. Annie, do you want to pop up here?
Sure.
Offer her a lifeline.
My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the criminal division. And as Ms. Cashin already said, the administration supports the bill, but I just had that one little revision.
Representative Gatto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The difference between driving and operating.
I would have to bring you case law to describe that, but my understanding is that operating is broader than driving. Operating includes sitting in a parked car with the engine on, and this would not prohibit using a cell phone while you're operating, only while you're driving.
Got it.
Representative Gargill.
Annie, it talks about the penalty section here about 2890.010. It's an infraction, and I went back and looked at it. Would it be reasonable then that if somebody was talking on the phone and it was tried to defend themselves under some emergency circumstance, I see here that the fine could not exceed $300. What is the reasonable argument that a youngster might make saying, I really need it. There was somebody stalking me. I needed to make the call because I can very clearly remember my own daughter who worked for Alaska Airlines probably before she was 18 driving. Somebody was trying to run her off the road. She made the phone call. It really saved her life. And if under those circumstances she had to have an infraction, what is the plea or how is that handled?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, that would be the defense of necessity, and it's described in Title 11.
Mr. Chairman, is that a police discretionary move, or do you think that that's something that she would have to go answer in court?
Through the chair, you know, it sort of depends. Our police officers, I think, throughout the state exercise good judgment and discretion in whether or not they're going to cite somebody. Mm-hmm. But in the case that a person would get cited under those circumstances, that would be a defense that could be raised. You know, and our prosecutors also exercise discretion and good judgment. If it came to the point where it went to court, that would be a defense that she could raise.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problem moving forward with the bill as long as we have a reasonable discussion that there is necessity from time to time. And I want to make sure that we talk about that. And I was thinking, do we need to have even a rebuttable presumption in here? But if we have that necessity language as a backdrop, that may be enough. I don't mind them sitting on that speedway zone that goes between school and wherever they're going to the fast food joint. Probably necessity is going to be a little less found there, but on those occasions where there is that need, I would shudder to think that their public safety would then somehow be shattered by this.
I think the necessity defense would kick in. You could raise it, and I would hope that our criminal justice system would work to weed out those cases before they even came to trial.
Thank you. Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think Representative Coghill, he had the same kind of question I had. I had a couple situations like that as a kid. This is a violation as written under or it's an infraction. But would the fact that if we pass this bill, it would be illegal for teens to use a cell phone while driving, could that somehow be used to shoehorn and have them charged for something like negligence? Would that serve as proof that they were driving negligently or something? Could this be used as sort of proof of negligent driving such that they could be on the hook for a misdemeanor? Or is there some way that this creates a presumption that would tie in with any of our other laws?
Through the chair, I don't think it would provide a presumption that a person would be guilty of a misdemeanor. I suppose a civil attorney could advise you better than I could that violation of a statute might be evidence of negligence in a civil context. But I'm not the person to ask about that.
But Mr. Chairman, but in a criminal context, you don't think there's any chance that this being used, because if we make it illegal with the intent that it be an infraction, you know, we wouldn't then want it to be that to be used as evidence to get them into a higher level of criminal culpability.
Well, through the chair, it depends on the circumstances. If a person is driving drunk with a if a person under 18, because this only affects people under 18, is driving using a cell phone and is intoxicated, and all this evidence could be used in a prosecution for a more serious case if there were more serious consequences. But just that fact alone would not.
Okay. Representative Holmes, you're going to question this bill right past our time frame. We finally have a bill up from a member of your caucus, so the question time is yours.
I'm done, Mr. Chairman. That was the only one I had.
Are there any other questions from committee members? All right, seeing none, public testimony is closed. We don't have anybody else, do we, online? Okay. And nobody else in the room that wishes to testify, we'll bring it back before the committee. Is there committee discussion? And then we will entertain at least one amendment. Is there any question here amongst the committee members?
The only discussion I get, Mr. Chair, is this, that, you know, driving by definition is multitasking. And if you can't multitask, maybe you shouldn't be driving to begin with.
Well, that raises the issue of whether we want kids driving at age 16, from my mind. But if you've seen the kind of carnage that I have with young people and the things that happen to people like Tyler Wasson, I am...
And I, too, sir, have seen carnage. As a former policeman, I've been an ambulance driver.
Yes, sir.
And a mortuary person.
Representative Lynn, you've done every profession known to man.
I can't
and the
job.
Whole legislature knows it. I've done everything.
You ask.
Amendment number one, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to make conceptual amendment number one, and that would be on page one, lines 10 and 11, and it would be to change the two words
probable
cause to reasonable suspicion.
Is there an objection to conceptual amendment number one? Seeing none, amendment number one passes. Any other amendments from the committee? Chair would entertain a motion.
Can I make a comment?
Representative Gatto.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair. When my son was under 18, he was against this, but he's 19 now, and he's for it.
That's the way the world works. All right. With that, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to move House Bill number 15, version E, with zero physical note and individual recommendations.
Thank you. And seeing no objection, HB 15 passes from committee. Representative Gardner, I trust you that you're not going to press this beyond teenagers, which is clearly the level of tolerance here amongst the committee members. But cheers to you for this effort to make our streets safer and to make teens live longer with all of their limbs functioning properly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And at 3:02, the Judiciary Committee is...